Shall we recommence? Moving on to papers three and three A, uncertain tax position. Verena?
The committee received a request to clarify whether IS 12 or IS 37 shall be applied to the recognition of a current tax, the amount of which is uncertain. The requests submitted describe the situation in which tax laws require an entity to make an immediate payment when a tax examination results in an additional charge, even if the entity intends to appeal against that additional charge. The committee discussed this issue in January and May and tentatively decided to develop an interpretation in response to the existing diversity in practice. The staff papers for this meeting have two main objectives. The first one is to make a recommendation in respect of the scope and the transition requirements of the draft interpretation. And the second objective is to present the draft interpretation for your discussion. Paragraphs 14 to 16 of Agenda Paper 3 propose to broaden the scope of the interpretation to include recognition of all current tax assets and liabilities, the amount of which is uncertain, irrespective of whether an entity has made a payment to tax authorities. We also think that the interpretation should not address issues relating to measurement, because this would be too broad an issue for the Interpretations Committee to deal with on a timely basis. Paragraphs 17 to 20 of Agenda Paper 3 propose retrospective approach both for entities that already apply FRS and for first-time adopters. Agenda Paper 3A presents the draft interpretation for your discussion. The consensus of the draft interpretation describes, first of all, the general principle of accounting for current tax assets and liabilities, the amount of which is uncertain, which is to apply IS 12. And secondly, how this principle should be applied to the specific fact pattern described in the submission and discussed by the committee. This specific guidance relates to the recognition of an excess of the amount paid over the amount due as a current tax asset. Paragraph 6b of the draft interpretation requires an entity to follow the following three steps. Step one is recognition of the amount of cash paid, which is a certain amount. Step two is recognition and measurement of the amount of tax due. The amount of the tax due is measured as the amount expected to be paid to the taxation authorities in accordance with paragraph 46 of IS 12. And step three is assessing the excess of the amount paid, which is certain, over the amount of tax due, which is uncertain, and recognition of the excess as a current tax asset. Our question to you is, do you have any questions on the feedback from consultations with ISB members? Do you agree with the staff recommendations with respect to the scope and the transition requirements of the draft interpretation? And do you foresee any unintended consequences of the draft interpretation? And finally, what comments do you have on the proposed draft interpretation as presented in Agenda Paper 3A? Thank you.
I have a couple of strong opinions, but I'll hold those. Sue?
On the topic of strong opinions, maybe I'll share my personal view, and I can't speak on behalf of the whole board, but I think it was a view shared at least by a few board members in the small group meeting that I attended. And that was concern about writing an interpretation where we felt that the scope between 37 and 12 was quite clear. And I think having read these papers and seeing that, if I count correctly, that only two respondents out of 10 would have agreed that an interpretation that just dealt with the recognition issue without measurement would be a good idea, would only reinforce my personal view. So I think that if this were to come to the board, I for one would be asking why we would need an interpretation that was basically confirming scope.
And then Philippe, I'm sorry, I didn't see you there.
I was taking the angle of unintended consequences of issuing this interpretation to somehow get to the same point as Sue about the scope. One unintended consequence I see in addressing only those taxes that are in the scope of IS-12 is that it throws doubt in accounting for prepayment of taxes that are not in the scope of IS-12. Say, property taxes, you have litigation with the government, you are required to make a down payment. The fact that you're not scoped in, does it make that you cannot treat similarly and recognize an asset? In my view, the principle here, whether it's a tax in the scope of IS-12 or whether it's a tax in the scope of IS-37, is that if you are required to make a down payment, it is a certain asset that should be recognized. It is a certain asset because it is going to be recovered, either through because you have an additional tax to pay and it's going to be an expense, or by offsetting some liabilities that will be recognized. So I think there is a principle here that applies regardless of whether that tax is in within the scope of IS-12 or IS-37. And I'm thinking of the unintended consequences if we just limit that frame to IS-12.
Philippe, that would be similar to some of your comments on IFRIC 21.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe just a question of wording, but regarding the scope of this proposed interpretation, it might be understood by people as not addressing the uncertainty on the existence of the tax liability, but only how much tax is due, which may result from either an uncertainty as to the basis for the tax or the calculation of the tax. And we say, but we don't address the measurement. But it is not clear from the explanations, the background, and the scope definition here that this uncertainty might very well arise out of the interpretation of the law, which might be either black or white, and then entity has decided it is black, or but it might be that the tax authorities will finally conclude it is white. But by seeing it's uncertainty on the amount, it might be like in IS-37, we have two types of uncertainty, the existence of the liability and the amount of the liability, which is the second step. Here we have the same situation, although it might be under IS-12 in the end, but first, is there a tax liability, and second, how much is it? So if it depends on the interpretation by the tax authorities, it's more an uncertainty as to the existence of the tax liability rather than the amount, which is the outcome. But the real problem is that is there a tax liability? So I would have phrased it a little bit differently, saying that there might be uncertainty in the amount as a result of an uncertainty on the existence of the tax liability. I think it has to be clear that we address the existence of the tax liability first, and then how much is it?
Andrew?
My sympathies lie with the three board members who felt that the scope question is clear. I think it's crystal clear that we're in IS-12, not IS-37. IS-37 says so. But nonetheless, the staff were brief with producing a draft interpretation. I think they've fulfilled the brief. The actual scope of the consensus, I thought the issue we were going to focus on was the issue in 6B, where tax rules and laws say you do have to prepay in the event of a dispute or tax inspection, and whether that somehow changes the amount of tax you would recognize at that point in time. So I think the brief was a brief interpretation, and it could be even briefer. It could be limited to 6B if the decision is we need to go down that route. But I'm of the view that the standards are clear, and this could be dealt with through an agenda decision.
Tony?
Yeah, me too. And my view last time was that the question is perfectly clear. It's an income tax. IS-37 does not apply to income taxes. IS-12 does. And that is perfectly clear. And I don't think we need an interpretation to address that. So my suggestion to the rest of the committee will be that we go back to where we were previously. We simply confirm that IS-12 applies to income taxes. if we decide to go ahead with an interpretation, like Andrew, I'd be inclined to limit it to the question we were asked and not expand. And I think that's simply we were asked a question. If we're going to interpret, then I think we should just interpret around the question that we were asked, which would be in 6B. If we go with that, I'm not actually sure the words in 6B follow. I just think that the construction of the sentences doesn't quite work. But say my preference would be that we go back to simply saying IS-12 applies to income taxes.
Let's go with Sandy and then Martin, and then I'm going to direct a couple of questions to our securities regulators.
I guess my thoughts were in line with what Sue said, in that why do we need an interpretation? Because it seems like through this interpretation, we're actually going to recognize more assets. We're basically telling someone credit, cash, debit the recoverable, and wait and see what happens. And as a user of the financial statement, something happened here, and I'm not necessarily going to see that. It seems to me that we're interpreting to allow the recognition of this in more instances than it may be recognized today. And I'm saying, well, then go measure the liability the way that you would have before, but why did I need to tell anybody that in the first place? And so to me, it seems like the net result of this is that more assets are going to be recognized. I mean, if the question had been raised as though I had a refund and now I have less of a refund, would we have had a question? Right? And to me, we shouldn't have had a question because they're the operation of the same thing. But to me, the taxing examiner has said you owe this money and we'll debate it. And as a user of the financial statements, I'd like to know that. And am I going to see that? And is this allowing me that insight, or is it just recognizing the asset? To me, it seems like, why do we need an interpretation? It's so clear. By interpreting it, we may get a result that I wouldn't think would be the one I'd want to see.
Martin?
What is the value added of an interpretation? I guess the last time we said, well, there is a huge diversity in praxis currently, with regard to this issue. And I also guess this was the outcome of the outreach. And therefore we said, well, to have a smooth, say, transfer in of this philosophy, we should end up with an interpretation. Personally, I believe, well, we could also do without interpretation, but I'm absolutely with Laurence. For me, the question is a little bit broader than we just had discussed. Probably that's challenging with the board members. For me, the question is really, and then also for the huge community, what is with deposits for other court cases, for taxes, or for other legal issues? What is with escrow accounts? When we typically, well, some tend to say, well, this is a contingent asset. And because it is a contingent asset, I have another threshold to recognize it than an asset within IRS 12. So do I really have this, well, view only, well, separated to IRS 12? And when I'm in another situation, I have a different kind of assets then? Is this really true, or more or less do I have to look at the assets, so the paid in capital, so to say, separately, and consider whether the general asset criteria are to be applied? And it is probably a question then of measurement, but not a question of recognition. And this, I guess, is an important issue to address.
I'm going to try and limit this here in a minute, but I want to turn to our IOSCO representatives. Shelley, you first. As I recall, uncertain tax provisions was a major area of practice abuse in the United States, that the SEC expressed some pretty strong concerns about, and that led the FASB to act. Do you perceive that same condition to exist in other jurisdictions as well? And I'll ask both of you to respond to that.
Speaking from the SEC's perspective, no. From an IOSCO perspective, I'd probably look to Patrick to tell me if he's heard of that from other IOSCO members.
Patrick?
Not necessarily, sorry, from IOSCO members only, but in Europe we have observed that there are countries where enforcers are facing situations that are related to this topic, and we feel that it would be useful to clarify how to account for those uncertain tax positions. It's also a matter of clarifying how to measure the item that potentially might be recorded.
Okay, I'd like to propose to limit the discussion.
I might confirm that also that a huge European enforcer had this specific question, and their view was probably not in line with our view here, where we all say, oh, it's crystal clear. So the outcome was a little bit different.
Okay.
So their view is that it's not crystal clear that you should recognize it, or that there's a measurement issue?
The question was whether you are in IRS 12 or 37.
But the issue since the tax authority had already spoken, you'd kind of come out. The uncertainty from the tax perspective was final. You'd come out of the tax accounting, and now you were almost like litigation accounting, whether you were going to have a gain contingency.
I'd like to propose that we restrict the conversation, Laurent's and others' views notwithstanding. We have a standard on accounting for income taxes. And that is the question around which this revolves. Yes, there are other things imposed by governments, but they ain't income taxes. And so we have to live with the army that we have, not the army we wish to get. I would also like us to explore whether we should include measurement in any interpretation. I'll let my personal view leak in. The idea of issuing an interpretation that says if you have a question about income taxes, look at Standard 12 strikes me as hardly worth the paper it's written on. But I do recognize that measurement of uncertain tax positions has been a significant issue. And so I'd like to take it in that direction, if I may, but I'll go around the room, starting with John.
I suppose to answer your question first on measurement, Wayne, I think it would be great to be able to take it on the agenda to deal with measurement. I'm not sure we would be successful. So I think it might be worth some analysis as to whether we think we could reach an interpretation that dealt with measurement or a position which proposed amendments to the standard. I mean, the board's already been through an exposure draft that dealt with uncertain tax positions, and it didn't get finalized into a standard. So I think before we went down that.
I'm not sure it was because of that.
No, I agree with
pretty
that.
Sure, but it wasn't because of
that. But it's a very big piece to bite off for the committee. So I think an analysis of whether we thought we could reach a conclusion, I think, would be worthwhile. On the issue about IAS 12, I mean, the uncertainty that arises in IAS 12 as to scope. I mean, I think some people read the scope of IAS 12 and say it's clear, it's income, you know, applies to income taxes, and these are income taxes. People do read paragraph 88 that actually talks about contingent liabilities and contingent assets that arise from disputes, unresolved disputes with tax authorities. Now, that's a disclosure requirement, but it quite clearly refers to contingent liabilities and contingent assets arising from disputes with tax authorities. And some people do point to that as evidence that you go to IAS 37 where you have disputes with tax authorities, and that's why people have a policy where they do not recognize an asset when they make these payments, because they apply the contingent asset recognition criteria in 37. So I think it's a bit simplistic to say it's crystal clear it's an income tax, it's in the scope of IAS 12. I think there is a paragraph in 12 that actually does point to IAS 37.
Tony?
To answer your question about measurement, my reaction to that is it would be a rather big thing for us to bite off, since it wasn't the only reason that the IASB's attempt to revise IAS 12 didn't go anywhere, but I think the proposals were at least a part of the reason. There was quite a lot of discomfort around the proposals, so And I'd be happy to have a debate, but I really wonder whether it's something that we would be able to deal with effectively. I just maybe a couple of observations on what others have said. I think the reference to the disclosure of contingent assets and liabilities arising from income taxes, I've always read it as being exactly that it addresses disclosures and requires disclosures in that context, rather than getting back into the question of recognition. And I guess I'm not sure that either an agenda decision or what is written would necessarily lead people to recognize more or less assets as a result of applying the guidance in IS 12. If you're already in IS 12, then you would recognize the amount that you expect to pay or the amount you expect to recover. And so I think I come back to the perspective that it's an income tax and that there is recognition guidance in IS 12 for income taxes.
Reinhard?
I likewise agree that from my perspective, that it's IS 12 that applies to this particular circumstance. But I think, as a number of others have commented, and as we talked about at our last meeting, there is diversity in practice. I think some people point to the guidance that John referenced as the bridge to IS 37 because it involves some litigation. So there's some people say there's uncertainty as to, is it IS 12 that applies because the litigation is around taxes, or is it IS 37? And I think when we originally had a draft agenda decision, the concern was raised by some people that the way it was written implied that it's clear it's an IS 12. They had not been following IS 12. Does that mean it's an accounting error? And so they were proposing that we issue an interpretation or something to put more due process around that and have some transitional guidance. So having said all of that, my own personal view would be if we were to do an interpretation, it would be very narrow focused to the specific fact pattern. I would love it to be broader and love it to deal with measurement, but as I think a couple of others have said, that's probably a project that, you know, is bigger than we could chew off. Or alternatively, if we decided that really in substance, I think as Wayne you were implying, the interpretation really doesn't say anything more that's in IS 12, so what is it worth, then perhaps if we do an agenda decision, we be careful in terms of how we word it so that those people who haven't been following IS 12, given there is some uncertainty out there, despite the views of many of us that IS 12 does apply, that doesn't imply that it's an error that they've done.
Yeah, we would never want to imply correction of an error, but always said that isn't a territory we get into. Andrew, and then back over to the regulator corner here.
Yes, just on the measurement question, I accept it is a big topic, and there's been a previous attempt that didn't get anywhere, but I do just wonder if we could at least, without biting off more than we can chew, consider the question of detection risk, which I think is a major piece. I know in the dispute with prepayment scenario, detection risk isn't actually at issue, but in many other situations, it is the most significant measurement uncertainty.
Kelly?
Just in response to Reinhardt's concern that rejection wording that said it's clear but you don't have an error does put the regulators in a tough spot, because then it appears that either method is acceptable and we don't have an ability to force our preference. So if there is a lot of diversity in practice, I would suggest that the committee providing transition would be better than regulators providing on a case-by-case basis or regulator-by-regulator basis, determining, you know, how they're going to transition someone who wasn't following guidance that you guys thought was clear.
Laurence, then I'm going to try and wrap it up.
If the committee decides to go for that very narrow interpretation, I think it would be good in the basis for conclusion to explain that some analogy in the thinking possibly can be drawn for other cases. When you ask me, is it just the IFRIC 21 issue? No, it's not just the IFRIC 21 issue. Martin pointed to the court case. You have a court case, you must make a deposit. Does that mean that you cannot recognize
this perilous as an to me, I said similar to.
So. I think this needs to be acknowledged.
I think we have two or three choices here.
We need to pick one.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Michael. We have yet to see a paper on measurement.
Correct.
So saying it's too big to bite off before we've seen a paper on it might be previous. So I'll put that at one extreme of saying we bring this back with an eye toward an interpretation that deals with recognition and measurement. Seems to me the key areas there are detection risk and probability. Step two, moving back along the spectrum, is to proceed with the document that we have in front of us. Step three, going even farther, is to, and I hope, Michael, you're writing these down.
I am.
Step three is to limit the document more to the specific question that was raised in the submission, because we did expand the issue last time to say, well, we want uncertain assets and liabilities in scope, so we could even restrict it further. Or, let's do nothing. Stop. Issue an agenda decision and be done with it.
Is there any reason why we couldn't combine? So maybe if I have nervousness about attacking measurement, it will be putting off the clarification of which standard you're in for quite a long time until we decided, yes, we could do measurement and this is where we thought we'd take it, or no, we can't do measurement. And I'd be quite happy to have a paper that explores measurement. But we could do that separately from either going ahead with interpretation or going back to an agenda decision around which standard applies, and that way we don't hold up answering the question that we've been given while we address
point taken. And we could combine, and I can't see issuing an interpretation and saying, especially for the board members who tend to get grumpy about things like that, stay tuned for chapter two. So I think if we think there are two chapters, we ought to. But I take your point. I didn't recall the concern about people saying that they had interpreted what we said as a correction of an error. Andrew, I think that was your point. But we can certainly clarify that. So an agenda decision would say, we think you're in 12. We think, though, there's some interpretation that could be done around 12, so stay tuned.
And perhaps pick up the things that I think both Reinhardt and John were saying about this bridge being the paragraph 88 that refers to the presentation or disclosure, and explaining that that is about the disclosure, not there's about the recognition
about
and measurement.
About recognition and measurement. I think that would be a blow for truth and justice. Okay, so of my four choices, Michael, read them all.
Okay, so bring back a paper for recognition and measurement, including looking at detection risk and probability. The second, proceed with the current draft of the interpretation. The third would be to amend the current draft of the interpretation to look at just the specific question raised in relation to prepayment. And the fourth is an agenda decision.
That would essentially say we're quitting.
Yeah. Indeed.
Okay, first preferences. Starting from four and working backwards. How many want to just quit? Two. That was my alternative. Okay. Yeah, first preferences.
One, two, three, four, five.
Okay. Okay, you don't get to vote more than once this round. So alternative three was restrict the scope even further to the specific question that we were asked.
One, two, three.
Okay. alternative two was continue with the existing document.
One, two, three, four, five.
You sure you didn't already vote on one? And alternative one was bring back recognition and measurement.
Is it possible to change the four?
Well, excuse me, Martin, go ahead.
I changed my mind.
So you're changing your vote now to just stop. Bruce, did you want to come in?
Well, I mean, the only comment I had was that there was a small hybrid in my mind between one and four, because I think that the issue that's been addressed is, you know, where we're saying don't do anything, and I agree not do anything on the current proposal, but I think that there's a potential of looking at the measurement as a second issue. So I think we were saying one is, well, let's look at measurement as part of this. I agree, I wouldn't look at it as part of this. I would say in terms of this, my vote was on four. But I still think that the question that has arisen is the one on measurement, so maybe that is something to address.
Okay, so this would say that we're, if I sense the slim majority of the committee, we issue an agenda decision now saying on the specific question we were asked, we're through. It's in 12. The bridging paragraph potentially is disclosure only. And we'll work up an agenda decision on those lines. However, and I heard very slim support from this, but I'm going to hang on to it by my fingernails. We ought to at least take a look at measurement. And acknowledge that we're going to do that, and with the promise from the staff that we won't do it any more than absolutely necessary. If we conclude that it's not doable, we'll come back and tell you that. Or Mark, specifically Michael and Irina. Yep.
We'll come back. And
okay. Agreed? Objections? None appearing? We're done. Okay. Now, where are we on?